Hey everyone, it's Anthony, and we would just like you to know I'm speaking for me and Jeff, but you could also, maybe I'm using the royal we. Royally, we would love to have the honor of your presence at our next patron hangout, which is happening Thursday the 20th at 3 p.m. Pacific time. If you haven't come to one of these before, they're great. We all just jump on cam together, me, Jeff, and whoever of y'all shows up, and have a nice chat, catch up, see what we've all been doing for the month. If you want to be a part of that, you can find out how at patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. And if you are already a patron, just a reminder that this is happening Thursday, the 20th at 3 p.m. Pacific time. And you must now address me in the royal we. Yeah, I think what we're trying to get at here, and what we're always trying to get at, is that children are stupid. This is We Have Concerns. Hi, Jeff Cannata.
Hi, Anthony Carboni.
Hello, concerned citizens. You know, Jeff, I don't know if we have ever discussed this as an episode, but I know we've certainly brought it up before. This is something that comes to us from the Discord. Thank you for submitting stories in the Cool Science News Discord, not just to get on the show, but to discuss and to have fun with the rest of the concerned citizens.
Stuff we talk about on the show is a tiny fraction of all the awesome stories that are in the Discord in the Cool Science News channel.
Yeah, it's a really wonderful place to just check in and get all kinds of great stuff. If you want to find out more about joining that Discord, head to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. We'll talk more about that a little bit later. But in the Cool Science News Discord, we had Z Mansfield, who's quickly rocketing, I think, to superstardom as far as concerned citizens go. Z Mansfield submitted a story about Dunbar's number. And I know we've brought up Dunbar's number, but I don't think we've done an episode on it.
I agree. I don't think we have.
But the reason he brought up Dunbar's number now, and if you're unfamiliar, Dunbar's number is actually a set of numbers that was created. It was about 30 years ago. It's the early 1990s. It was the dawn of telecommunications. Really, like international telecommunicate, like the internet, stuff like that. Like
the idea of being able to talk to people that aren't in your immediate vicinity.
Computers was happening, baby.
Computers happened, yeah.
Computers was happening. They were connected to each other. We were connecting to each other on terrible, terrible bulletin board systems and things like that. particularly the nerdier among us and the techier among us were knee deep in it already by the early 1990s. I was way too far into it. You want to talk about a kid who did not get enough socialization. But Dunbar's number is a set of numbers created by a British anthropologist named Robin Dunbar that argued the number of people, basically, the number of relationships that a human being can keep in their head.
Yeah, the upper bound for friends, right?
The upper bound for friends, but also the upper bound for a lot of different things. We're talking about, he started with talking about the Elite Five, which I defeated all of them in Pokemon. Every single one
did.
Of the Elite. Yeah, good you job. Think it's just the Elite Four, but there's a secret fifth. You must face yourself in the mirror after you've collected and subjugated so many living things and hurt so many other children in your quest for supremacy. The fifth elite is you, and you must face yourself in therapy for years. But the Elite Five are supposed to be your best friends and loved ones. The five people that any time of day, these are the people that you have the deepest connection with.
And on your homepage of MySpace.
Yes. This was Dunbar back then in the 1990s called it your top eight. And it always, it always included Tom. So it was really a top seven.
Yeah.
It was Tom plus seven. Tom. Yeah. It was Dunbar's elite Tom plus seven is what he called it. But also there was your close friends, which are one step underneath your elite five, and that would be 15. That's the maximum.
Yeah.
Then you have 150, which is what we really think of as Dunbar's number, because that is the number of people that you can have stable social relationships with before your brain just goes, I don't have any more room.
Nope. No more friends. Sorry. No more people I can know.
No new friends.
Right.
Tattoo it on your abs, because it is what your cortex says.
And this is based on the idea that we evolved without the ability to even possibly encounter that many people on a regular basis. It's just
kind
of geographically, spatially difficult. But then all of a sudden, technology said, oh, wait, no, you can be in constant contact with an infinite number of people if you so choose.
If you so choose.
And our brains just went, we're not ready for that. Yeah. Dunbar's posited that our brains went, no, we're not capable of that.
Yeah, and the way Dunbar looked at that is not just looking at evolutionary data and theory, but also looking at groups of primates in the wild.
Right.
And looking at how many...
And how they use Facebook.
And how... Yeah, and boy, do they ever. I think more primates use Facebook, in all honesty, than any other species. It feels like it. Feels like it.
A lot of jackals, I think, too.
Yeah, it's mostly jackals and hyenas and primates. And then DJs.
Yeah.
And improv comics. Anybody who needs you to see a show. But this was the idea, is that we simply do not have the physical wiring within our bodies, within our neocortex, to do more than this. Even if you try to have 50 friends or 150 stable social relationships, you can't keep them up. There's no way you can keep up with that. And it made a lot of sense. I think we all looked at it and we were like, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I can't imagine that.
Right.
Can't imagine it. It makes sense to me that all of these numbers would work. The lowest, but here's the thing, the lowest of Dunbar's groupings was a number that was in the range of 1,500. And do you know what that was, Jeff? That was the number of people you can name.
Oh, I can name 1,500 people?
That's the most. I mean, maybe some people can name a little bit more. Some people can name a little bit less. Just like some people can have, you know, up to 200 stable relationships, but some people only have 100. These numbers are the general. They're the mean. They're the mean
average,
right? That
doesn't make any sense, because I follow like 3,000 people on Twitter.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I can name all of them.
I can name every single person I've ever interacted with on the internet. But this was the number that made some people go, huh, that's interesting, and made us think like, wait a minute, we're accepting these numbers because they sound good, they sound right, but when you get to that, I begin thinking, wait, what are these theoretical limits about?
Right.
I have a vocabulary of 20,000 words. I can remember things, right?
Right.
There are people that can name pi up to thousands of digits. Why would we not be able to name people? Why would we not be able to have more of these relationships?
Yeah, I bet I know more than 1,500 song titles.
Yeah.
Or movie titles.
You absolutely do. I could probably rattle off like synopses for movies, comics, video games. I could name 1,500 video games easy if you sat me down. I bet I could do it.
Yeah. But,
so people were like, okay, why couldn't I have an elite 20 instead of an elite 5 if I'm that sort of person? What makes these... Are we really wired for this, or is this just something that we're observing in nature and we're deciding is real?
Now, are you going to tell me that Dunbar is full of shit?
Well... The first time somebody looked into this was in 2012. 2012, Jeff. Listen, if the 1990s was when we were doing computers, 2012 is when we was doing the social apps. Oh my Lord, Jeff, 2012 was a smartphone in the hand and a social network in your heart. Yeah. I think in 2012, I was still posting my real-time location to the internet so my friends could find me at bars and restaurants.
There was no downside in 2012.
Baby, what's the downside?
In 2012, it was all upside to just post away, accumulate more networks, more friends, get on that phone. We saw nothing wrong with it.
Baby, let's get on these apps. I'm ready to welcome the world into my heart and my neocortex. Yeah,
I want to be the mayor of my local Chili's restaurant.
Listen, I still haven't evolved beyond that based on Pokemon Go. Like, I'll take any gym, anytime, anywhere. Uh-huh. I'll be the king of that gym if I can. God, the shit I was the mayor of on Foursquare, Jeff. Kids, ask your parents. Foursquare was fucking garbage.
It had a moment. It had like a year when everybody was all about Foursquare. And then we all just collectively went, this is complete stupidity that we're participating in.
People know where I am at all times? That's terrible. Here's how, I mean, this is how naive the internet was in 2012. It wasn't just like me and Jeff posting on Foursquare. All of the women I knew were voluntarily posting their real-time location on the internet. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
A world in which that happened from 2010 to 2012, or like maybe even 2009 to 2012. If I was at a bar, I checked in. If my friends were at bars, they checked in, and then we knew where everyone was and we would all just meet up. It really felt like a utopia. It wasn't.
Yeah.
We all know that now.
It turns out all of that was a massive mistake.
The entire internet was a mistake.
Do you remember when we thought the internet was going to be the greatest? I remember very much thinking the internet was the key to all of it. It was going to be the most perfect place.
Like Jar Jar. Like George Lucas said, Jar Jar is the key to all of this.
And then it turned out,
ooh, maybe we don't
Mistakes
like Jar Jar as much.
Yeah.
I love Jar Jar, but maybe you don't. A lot of people don't. We thought the same thing about the internet. The internet was Jar Jar.
And then we all realized that
you secretly
saying,
a Sith.
We's gonna die.
We's gonna die. I mean, we say this as two jaded people that literally make our careers on the internet. So,
oh yeah, thank God for the internet, but the internet is garbage.
Yeah. But anyway, in 2011, a journalist over at Wired, Rich Lax, was like, hey, wait a minute. I have more than 2,000 Facebook friends. I have single-handedly destroyed Dunbar's theorem. And
hey,
then
by
people
the way,
were like,
how do you think you refer to that guy's the former wife?
Oh, Rhonda as her own person, because she's not just defined as being Rich's wife. And that's one of the reasons that they broke up.
Oh, yeah, that's true. She really needed to find her own identity.
Yeah. So Rich Lax thought that he had destroyed Dunbar's theorem. But then somebody reminded him, Rich, you got to interact with those people.
And he was like, who are you again? I don't recall you being a friend.
I don't recall you. Unfriend, unfollow, unsubscribe. So if you don't actually interact with those people, they just fall into that latter number, that 1500 number. So by having 2000 friends on Facebook, Rich was actually proving Dunbar's theorem. So he said, fuck you, Robin Dunbar. I'm going to write to every single one of these people. I'm going to have a personal relationship with every one of these 2,000 people.
Okay. Was it possible?
It was not possible. He wrote to all of them. Some of them responded. Some of them didn't. A lot of them were like, who were you? He realized a lot of them he realized were like, you know, the way people used Facebook in the early part of this century, which was, that's that cute girl that's a friend of my friend, so I'm going to friend her and ask her to my party.
Right.
And then, you know, here he is 4 years later, and he's like, now I got to write a letter to this person. Hey, how are you? You know, and so it didn't work. Dunbar's theorem kicked his ass. He couldn't do it.
Score one for Dunbar.
Score one for Dunbar. But, Jeff, I don't know if you know, it ain't 2012 anymore, baby.
Are you saying we've evolved?
Rhonda's remarried.
Oh, yeah. The former Mrs.
And she
Mrs.
kept
Lacks.
Her name this time.
What?
That's right. That's right.
Smart. Smart, Rhonda. You be you.
That's right. And now, a new study was published just last week in the journal Biology Letters. The researchers have taken a look. This is the Institute for Future Studies.
I like
Stockholm.
That place. Yeah. Of course it's in Stockholm.
Dude, there are two things I love. I love anything that's called like Institute for Future Studies or some sci-fi ass shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then number two, just Sweden. Just the Scandinavian countries just feel clean and futuristic to me.
Yeah. They got time and energy and focus to worry about the big problems of the future.
Oh, the modern the modern furniture, the postmodern furniture, the fact that all of them know how to run synthesizers and not just like they use like patch synthesizers. You know what I mean?
It's like Kraftwerk as far as the eye can see over there. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
there's actually a joke. There was like all this merch that you could buy when I went to Sweden that was like a series of cartoon like things, and it was like, oh, what do you do? And it was drawn like a children's book, and it was like a fireman and a policeman and a doctor. Yeah. And it was like, what do you do? Oh, I'm a firefighter, and also I make music. And then it's like, oh, what do you do? Oh, I'm a doctor, and also I make music. Oh, because that's the way it is over there. They all have perfect synthesizers.
Of course they do.
God, it's beautiful. Synthesizers and just clean energy. Anyway, over there at the Institute for the Future, they were in the middle of a jam session and they decided to stop and run a study. And they said, yo, you can't state any one number like that. Patrick Lindenfors, a zoological ecologist, was like, nah, we're updating this data. This is 30 years old at this point, and it's based on a lot of gut feelings.
Right.
You know,
well, we're a generation down the road now. We're a generation of kids who have integrated with that kind of socialization from birth.
Mm-hmm.
So I would assume that we've added capacity just generationally.
But even before adding capacity generationally, did we just accept those limitations because they sounded right to us and we saw it in primates, right?
Right. Yeah.
You know, it might have been in Blink, or it might have been it was one of those early Malcolm Gladwell books where he tells a story about his father throwing out broken glass. And when his father was throwing out broken glass, instead of just putting it into the trash can or putting it in sweeping it all into a bag and then throwing the bag into the trash can, his father would take the bag of broken glass, put it in a cardboard box and tape the box shut. And he said, oh, what are you doing? He's like, so the garbage man doesn't hurt himself on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of pointed that out as, my father was the sort of person who thinks about everybody. Yeah. That sort of person isn't limited by this 150 person number, you know?
Because they think of all people they encounter as being associates, acquaintances.
Being acquaintances.
Automatons probably, that they bump into during the day.
He could probably name that sanitation worker's name. He could probably picture that person, right? And so they took a look at this and they said, yeah, it's not. They said the same thing that we said. I know 20,000 words. I can memorize 20,000 faces if you ask me to. It's not just the neocortex. It's not just innate tendencies because we are an animal. A lot of it comes down to culture. Right? Mm. Culture is everything. We talked about how culture affects linguistics last week.
Yeah, right.
We talked about how almost worldwide
the sound of things is affected, but it's based on your cultural, your language, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's like almost worldwide this is true, but it's not true worldwide. And that means it's not 100% true.
Right.
They have looked at this and they said, no, culture changes everything. It affects everything from the size of our social networks to whether we can play chess, to whether we like hiking, to whether we, to what sports we follow. Everything is cultural, just as
how many synthesizers we have on hand at any given time.
Yeah. How many, and do we do modular synths, or are we just basically software based synthesis? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's all cultural.
It's all cultural. It's all cultural. So when they looked at that, they decided to look at different cultures and they found, you know, this is pretty like UK centric, American centric. Yeah. You know, the actual problem is like the confidence intervals, even in Dunbar's original study, put estimates between 2 and 520 people for that 150 person number.
Wow. That's a huge delta.
That's a huge delta. And of course, this was only in like 10%, right? But, or 5 to 10%. But it's 5 to 10% of the people they looked at. And it's 5 to 10% of the primates they looked at. And so when the Institute for Future Studies looked at all of it, they were like, no, if we took in more data and we looked at more and different cultures, we would find this to be incredibly different. You know, you look at some indigenous and Inuk cultures, and their entire village is in that elite number. Their entire, everybody they interact with within a given period of time is within the elite number. Not just the 150, but what we would consider in the UK or in the United States to be our elite five, they can have an elite 50.
Wow.
Because that's the way their culture works.
Yeah, they're just structured differently socially.
They are structured differently socially. And so that means Malcolm Gladwell's dad, who knows and remembers everybody, That's just something he decided on, or a behavior that he cultivated in himself early on.
Right.
So this 150 number, this 5 number, this 15 number, there's no way that this is set in stone. There's no way that it's wired into our brains.
I have to admit, though, just anecdotally, I certainly fit into the more limited, narrow spectrum of this capacity, because I certainly am in that case where I have a small group of people that I feel like I can even respond to, you mm-hmm. know, like I'll get a text from somebody that I like that says, hey, we should grab lunch. And I go, I want to do that, but it feels like too much. But if I got that text from a different person, it's not because I like that person more. It's just because I feel like they are sort of within the established parameters of what I'm already doing. Like I already get lunch with that person. That person is in the narrow group of people with whom I get lunch. It doesn't feel like a strain or a stress on my week to do it with that person. But then this other extraneous person that I see much less frequently, I want to have lunch with them. I want to catch up with them, but it just feels like a strain in some way.
Yeah. Well, you think about the creature of habit thing that we talk about quite a lot, and you think about even everything down to like the physical way the brain works, myelination, the fact that your brain oils up and greases down connections that you use more often so you can use them faster and easier, and then we'll default to those connections. This is somebody I get lunch with, so it feels easy to get lunch with this person. This is somebody I don't normally get lunch with. They may live within the same distance. They may be willing to go to the same restaurant that you go to lunch with this other person with. It's not any harder. It's just not what we normally do.
Right.
So I can, definitely everything we know about our biology sort of supports what you're saying. There might be a median or a mean number that is easier for people to reach. But I also think you and I may be on the low end of that, even within Dunbar's number.
I certainly feel like I am. And I think that comes from the fact that I just sort of always was a kid that didn't have a lot of friends and relied on my own imagination and hung out with myself a lot and just was kind of an introvert as a kid.
Yeah. It's hard for me too, for the same reasons. And so for me, it's kind of like, it's like we were talking about a couple weeks ago, people who are extroverted, they ran that study that said people who are extroverted had a really rough time during COVID quarantines.
Right.
Whereas people who were introverted their whole lives were basically psychologically unaffected.
Yeah. We're like, sort of fine. This is normal.
Yeah. We're sort of that, like, I definitely got through a lot of my backlog of like games and movies and stuff last year. Was I depressed and scared and fucking, you know, like everybody else was? Yes. But you know, I think less than maybe a lot of people. In a lot of ways.
Or maybe for different reasons, right?
Or for different reasons.
We had this, I think, certainly I had this existential dread. It didn't have as much to do with, oh, I can't go out of the house and see my friends. Going out of the house and see my friends, I could take or leave at any given time, frankly.
That's fine. You know, we talked about that before this happened. I was actually in the midst of a really tough experiment for myself, where I was trying to be more social. You remember it was 2020 was my year of, say yes to anything you're invited to.
Yeah.
And that's what I would do. I would say yes to anything I was invited to.
And up until March, you were doing so well.
I really was, though. When you think about, like, within that 90 days, like, it's silly, but also within that 90 days, you know, I went out and did more things with more people than I had in the previous probably 3 years. So, I mean, that also says to me, and I was, you know, I was like, oh, I'm making more friends and I'm doing more stuff. And that even shows me that this number is a cultural construct as much as anything else. Our lives may be built in such a way in modern society that you have an elite five, a close 15, a casual 150, because that may be the way that things are. If you think about it, particularly if you think about American culture or Western European culture, you work a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so your elite five are probably the people that you see consistently in your free time. Your 15 are probably those people plus like other friends and work friends. And then you think about like the 150, that's probably the size of the office you work in.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like give or take. Totally. Plus the guy who works at the place where you get lunch, plus your dry cleaner, plus, you know what I mean? Like, it sounds like Dunbar's number was really more a critique of the way we've built culture.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense. And I think there's probably a lot of variance with personality type, as we've kind of been discussing. It feels like there isn't one constant for everyone, but it feels like your culture, not just your sort of geographic and national culture, but your sort of personal culture with regard to how you interact, how you were raised, the kind of person that you have become probably plays a large part in that too.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah. I find this incredibly fascinating. Yeah, I think...
Absolutely.
I just love... So much of this is everything, like so much of the stuff that we talk about in social sciences and what are called sort of the soft sciences, it gets updated so regularly because culture changes, our biases change, the things we want change. And it's just interesting to watch our sort of knowledge evolve. This was something that was considered to be a physical hard stop. And now we're looking at it and we're like, is it a physical hard stop or is it a governor that we put on our own engine?
Well, I think that's true, but I also think it's another example of the fact that evolution doesn't stop, right? The human, the human being continues to adapt to its environment. And as our environment involves more technology and that technology puts us in contact with more people, I think we become, our capacity increases, right? Which is another example of something we've talked about a lot on the show, which is everybody's scared of, oh, how technology is destroying us. Well, we are continuing to adapt to that, and technology is going to be part of how we evolve as a species, because now we're, you know, we're offloading parts of our brain function to these machines. Mm-hmm. We're expanding our spheres of both personal interaction and information gathering. All that stuff is part of, I think, our evolution as a species, and it's happening rapidly, but it's happening.
Yeah. I mean, just 30 years ago, you had to basically use a modular synth to get that sweet sound.
Yes. You can do it all through software. Yeah.
You don't even need to be in the same room as somebody to just make a really good progressive ambient dark album.
People are doing it on TikTok, baby.
People are doing it on the TikTok, baby. I'm friends with everybody I know on TikTok, baby. Do you know, this is the dumbest thing, but you know what popped into my head that made me think about this? There was an Astro Boy game for the GBA. Uh-huh. I fucking love Astro Boy. You know I love Astro Boy.
Yeah.
And this game was made by Treasure, which was one of my favorite game development houses of all time. You know I love Treasure.
Yeah.
But Astro Boy, the Omega Factor, was all about the more people Astro Boy met in this game. Like, you could go down like side paths and different levels and stuff. The more people Astro Boy met and connected with, the more powerful and more human he became. It's not just a cool like video game thing. It's not just an extremely on the nose metaphor, but it was an extremely on the nose metaphor that I really enjoyed, you know?
Yeah,
and I think this sort of points at that. And, you know, I think everybody, you fucking wear your masks and you be safe. And you only do the things that you're supposed to do. But as we're opening back up, and as the world begins spinning again, and the gears start speeding up, think about the last year. Think about how it made you feel, and decide what your personal Dunbar's number has been, and if you want to change it. I still do, I think.
You still want to change yours?
I still want to change mine.
You're going to pick back up on the say yes to the dress.
I'm going to say yes to the dress, baby.
Yeah.
I'm going to say yes to all the dresses.
I think you should.
Don't say no to any dresses or jumpsuits. I'm still on the lookout for a jumpsuit. I want everybody to know that.
You know, it's funny, and this is a whole other episode we could do, but for me, I think the more challenging thing has been to say no. And we've talked about that before. But
you just said you blow people off when they ask you to lunch. It's not hard for you to say no.
Yeah, but I have a harder time, I think, saying no to people. I have more guilt and FOMO and anxiety about saying no than I do about saying yes. I will say yes and do a thing, even if I don't have the time or bandwidth to process it.
And gotcha.
Yeah.
No, and there's some people have to do that too. Some people have to guard their time and guard their energy a little bit.
Yeah.
I moved way, way too much in the other direction, and it's so easy for me to say no to everything.
Well, one thing I admire about you, frankly, is that you understand your limits and you're able to express them. Mm. I think that's not easy for me.
Yeah, I think my problem over the last couple of years has been overprotecting the limits and retreating into them a little bit, and not pushing enough for growth. But this is all, like you're saying, this is all another episode, or maybe it's even a discussion to have with the beautiful, beautiful concerned citizens over on our Discord.
Yeah. We have much higher than Dunbar's number of friends there.
Eat shit, Robin Dunbar. Everyone's invited except you.
That's right.
How do you like that? We're making a social. You want to talk about the Omega Astro Boy, the Omega Factor? Our Discord is the Omega Factor. Forget Dunbar's number. It's about the Omega Factor, and we found it, and Robin Dunbar's not invited.
And also, you can talk about Astro Boy the Omega Factor in our games channel on the Discord. It's just all synergy. It's perfect.
It's all synergy, baby. The only thing you can't talk about are modular synths, because I cannot afford to get into modular synths. And you may have deduced that I've been looking at modular synths lately by the number of times I've brought them up. And shut up. If you want access to our Discord, by the way, it's very, very simple. All you do is you head to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns and sign up to support the show. Anything for $1 a month or above gets you access to that Discord. But as you move up in the number of dollars, so too does your Omega Factor.
Oh, you want to get that Omega Factor high, become more human.
The only way to become human is to give us all of your money. At $3, you get a bonus show every week. That is the conversation that Jeff and I are having as we start every episode of this show. You may be wondering, what are we talking about all the time? You can find out. At $5, you get access to our monthly patron hangouts, as well as extra bonus videos. It just keeps going. It just keeps going from there. And it is the only way that we support this show, that we keep this show going. It's the only way we get money for this show. So if you've been enjoying it and you'd like to help out and you'd like to help the show continue, patreon.com/wehaveconcerns.
Speaking of synergy, Anthony, I feel like
let's
our
watch Jem and the Holograms.
Week, yeah. Let's talk about Jem and the Holograms for computers specifically. No, I feel like our stories sync up not only because they were both submitted by the one, the only, Z Mansfield.
It's a double Z Mansfield.
Double Z Mansfield. But this is also about
Z Mansfield's going to get a nickname. Z Mansfield. One more. I'm going to say it right now, and you'll have to remind me. But Z Mansfield gets a nickname. Next one that goes through. You can't double maybe, episode. You can't well, double maybe, episode.
Why don't you just give it to him now, man? He did it. He double episode did.
Fuck.
Do it now. Give just, him the nickname.
Oh no. It's been so long since I've done one.
Maybe it should just be Synergy.
It's just Synergy Mansfield.
I like it.
Z Synergy Mansfield. Okay. Yeah. Your new nickname is Synergy. Not just because of this episode, but because you're a huge Jem and the Holograms fan. From what I know about you.
We don't know you're not, you know? Anyway, this is another social story. This is a story from the journal Nature about conversations. So it's very, very much along the lines of what we were already talking about this episode. Let me ask you a question, Anthony.
Sure.
Our show notwithstanding.
Yeah.
Or maybe withstanding. We'll see. What would you say the percentage of conversations that you are in ending when you want them to? What would
Jeff,
you say that you're in a conversation and you feel like it ends exactly when you want it? So it's not that you wish it had ended a little earlier or you'd like to go on a little more, but it ends right about the time you want it to.
Jeff, I think you know what I'm going to say to this. I think you know what I'm going to say. And please, this, listen, you're painting me with a misanthropic brush here. You backed me into a corner. You're forcing me to play to type here. But I'm going to tell you, it's a very low percentage.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you that I like to get in and out. I like to end on a button. And once I've done that button, I like to throw down a smoke bomb and disappear, particularly in a like party, social gathering, big group of people situation. I feel like I'm always trapped in a conversation with a person that I didn't want to be trapped. Like, it might be the one person. Like, I might walk into a room in the beginning of a day or be like a barbecue or something like that. I mean, this doesn't happen in the year of our Lord 2020 or 2021, certainly. But I would previously walk in and I would look and I'd be like, that's the one person I don't want to get stuck in a conversation with. I can tell. And fast forward to me getting stuck, like record scratch, camera cut. I am in a conversation with that person.
So you're saying almost never, almost never. It ends when you want.
Almost never. I would say a lot of them go on for me, they go on longer than I want.
Well,
what about you?
This I am this exact same way. I would put the percentage of time that a conversation wraps up exactly when I want it to as very close to zero.
Do you think it has anything to do with the fact that we are so used to having long conversations or any conversation like on a timer? I feel like so much of my life
you and I because of our jobs.
I feel like a lot of my professional life has to do with like, okay, this person is coming in. You have literally 2.5 minutes. We can't give you any longer than 2.5 minutes. Go. Or you are about to interview this person for this segment. They're kind of a talker. Keep them to 7 minutes. I feel like that's sort of like, I have a pretty good timer in my head at all times.
Yeah.
For a conversation. And I feel like that may be part of it, but it also may be that I found my way into this job because that timer was always there. I don't know.
Well, you'll be interested to learn that according to this study published in the journal Nature, and it's actually a series of studies, but the overarching...
Did the series end when they wanted it to?
No, it's ongoing. They wish it would stop. They can't. the series just drones on and on. Their scientific data has come to the conclusion that for most people, a conversation ends precisely when they hope it would, about 2% of the time. 2%. So we are not atypical, Anthony. For most people, they are either stuck in conversations way longer than they wanted, or they wish the conversation would continue and it ends.
This is the fundamental problem with society. We've found it. People, you're either somebody who thinks it ended too soon or somebody who thinks it didn't end soon enough or not. You know what I'm saying? One person wants it to go long. The other person wants it to go short.
And never the twain shall meet. And that's the problem, is that we can't get in a conversation with each other without disappointing all parties.
Jeff. Perhaps we've been thinking about society all wrong. Perhaps, listen, maybe it's not the haves and have-nots, Jeff. Maybe I've been screaming about billionaires too much. Maybe it's not the haves and the have-nots. Maybe it's not classism. Maybe it's not sexism or racism. Maybe we just need to be wearing some sort of emblem that lets us know whether we're a short talker or a long talker, and all of society's problems will be solved.
It's not the haves and the have-nots. It's the verbose and the brief.
That's what it is, baby. That's all it is. Listen, as I move back into the world, and I'm going to be forced for the first time probably to get on some sort of a dating app, there should be something in a dating app that says, are you a verbose or a brief?
Yeah.
And then it immediately, like, that would be the one thing. Listen, that's my one thing. If there was some way, now that I know that everybody thinks of themselves that way, what I want to do is I just want one modifier. That's all I need.
I like it.
I don't care what you look like. Okay. I don't care how old you are. I don't care. I'll date a 73-year-old woman.
She just won't tuck your ear off.
Brief.
Well, let me pose this to you though.
Yeah.
Because what if I have genuinely had this thought before. I've genuinely been in a conversation with a verbose as a brief myself and thought to myself, boy, I'm sure glad they're doing all the heavy lifting right now. You know, like, because I don't want to be here. I barely have the energy to keep up. And they are doing all the heavy lifting. And I appreciate
that. Yeah. Sometimes
but
that's
I guess,
good. Like,
I guess the alternative would be we'd just be done and we'd both go our separate ways and I'd be happy.
Do you know when it's good to do a verbose and a brief? Like at a wedding reception.
Yes.
Let that person do all the talking.
I have had that situation so many times where I've just been like sitting there thinking, I would prefer to be out of this conversation, but if I have to be in it, I'm glad that person is willing to just prattle on.
Because I'm only in it on a technicality. I'm only physically here.
Exactly. I don't have the energy to. I don't have the energy to provide any meaningful meat to this conversation at all.
I got no meat. I got no meat. I'm fixins. That's all I am.
That's all I am. I'm a garnish. Is
I'm
all
an
I am.
Amuse bouche, baby.
Exactly. I'm a tapas. Spice. I can add a lovely spice to any meat, but I'm not
a palate cleanser. I'm a palate cleanser. You don't want to get in a deep conversation with me. I don't have any hidden depths. I've got a 7-minute timer in my brain for all conversations.
Yeah. Yes, right. I'm good for like a bon mot. That's it.
Baby,
a pithy comment.
Lead us to the button for this scene. I can lead us to the button for this scene. We could strike that scene. We could swipe in 22 minutes perfectly. I can get us in and out, but you gotta let me do it.
you gotta
let me do it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny that we both talk for a living and we both feel like we're not conversationalists. But let me tell you about this study. So what they did, the first phase of the study was that they recruited pairs of people who already were very familiar with each other.
Okay.
They said 88% of the people of the couples were people who had known each other for at least a year, and 84% of the participants spoke to each other for at least a few times a week. So these are people who super comfortable with each other. It's not like you're just throwing a stranger in with a stranger that doesn't want to talk to each other. These are folks that like talk all the time, right? So what they did was they asked them to just have a conversation, and then they answered a survey recalling their most recent conversation and report its duration and indicate whether it ended when they want it to, right? Did they stay in it too long? Did they wish they could have talked longer? It's all self-reported, but only 2% of them thought that it ended exactly when they wanted it to.
Wow.
Then the second study, now they designed the second study to try to deal with the limitations of the first study. So they didn't want to rely on participants' recollection of an event. They didn't want to say, okay, you know, you had a conversation and now try to recall it. They brought in 366 people who were completely unacquainted with each other, strangers. And they brought them into a university lab room, basically. And they asked them to give up an hour of their time. And then they paired up these participants and they said, have a conversation about anything you want for up to 45 minutes.
Okay.
You just talk for up to 45 minutes. Conversation can go wherever you want, can do whatever you want, end it whenever you need, right? And then they were asked to do something else after that to just sort of like take their mind off the conversation. And then they asked them some questions. The same survey, basically the exact same survey that they did the first time.
Okay.
And again, there was a 46% discrepancy between the actual length of their conversations and the desired duration of the conversations. So they were unaware of when their partner wanted to end the interaction. They said, okay, when in the conversation would you have liked it to wrap up, and when did it actually wrap up? And they said there was a 46% discrepancy between how long it actually went and how long they wished it had went. And they say in the future, what they're going to do with this study is they're going to actually use transcripts so they can sit people down and like have them mark the exact moment when they wished the conversation would end. And basically the result of this study is that they're looking at these social indicators that nobody has really studied in a scientific way before. They talk about how like most of the stuff that's studied scientifically doesn't exist for humans to study it, right? The a black hole doesn't exist for humans to study it. It's not there for a human's benefit. It just exists in the universe and we look at it. A conversation only exists for humans' benefit. So it's not something that science has really examined before.
Yeah.
But they come up with all of these really interesting systems that we all have sort of tacitly agreed on that happen. Like no one ends a conversation without a few indicator words. Like, okay, well, I'll see you later. Bye. You know? Always happens. Even if you're talking to a complete stranger, even if you're talking to someone you didn't want to talk to at all, people will get, they analyzed conversations from like salespeople, like cold call salespeople. And even in that case, there these social indicators are required. Like you still say, okay, well, I gotta go, bye, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Can I tell you one of the most mortifying things to me is, okay, because number one, I am one of those people that's, I'm a brief, I like to get in and out.
Yeah.
But I also, you know, I have ADHD. I hyperfixate. I get very excited about certain things. And once I get started talking about those things, sometimes I can't stop. And it's terrifying to me as somebody who is normally brief. When I hear those cues from somebody, and yes. I know that those cues, a part of my brain is like, okay, they're done. And the other part of my brain is like, but let me explain more about modular synths. I'm only halfway through what I meant to. If I can just get to the end of this, they're going to be so on board.
Yeah.
They're not on board right now. They're trying to tell me they want out, but they only want out because we're at the point we are right now. We're at the darkest point. If you keep coming with, let me take you by the hand and lead you to the end of what I'm trying to say. And once I do, you're going to be like, oh, thank God I stuck around. Is that ever true? No.
Yeah, well, that's what they talk about is that there'll be these situations where one person will give the social indicator of like, okay, then, and then the other person will bring up some new topic because that person does not want the conversation to end and the first person does. They call those closing rituals. And they said they're systemically coordinated, or excuse me, systematically coordinated. And these researchers said that there's basically three types of closing rituals. They are the making arrangements, which is, so let's talk again on Monday. You know, like, oh, I'll talk to you on Tuesday, or I'll see you later on this afternoon, or whatever it is. The let's make arrangements is the first ritual.
Right.
The second is restating the reason for the conversation. I just wanted to see how you were doing.
Yeah. You know?
Which is, when you think about it, I mean, it's so normal. It's such a common thing. But when you think about it, it's hilarious that you would just you've had the conversation.
Yeah.
And you don't. You're now restating, you're basically saying to the person, I don't have any more reason to continue this.
Right.
I'm telling you why I called you, and I'm asking you to agree tacitly that we have accomplished that goal.
Yeah.
Right? I just wanted to call to see how you were doing. I have now seen how you are doing, so we're done.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's my most common one, I think.
Yeah.
And when I think about it, I get that from every member of my family does that too. We do the circle back around. We do the, well, I just wanted to see how that class was going, or I just wanted to
wish you a happy birthday.
Yep. Just wanted to say happy Mother's Day. Could you shut the fuck up? Please.
If you really parse that sentence, what you're saying is, I only wanted to do this one thing. Don't make me do more than that.
I have gotten what I needed from this. And you are giving me additional baggage. I bet a lot of people who consider themselves like these brief people, and I brief and verbose is like we just created that. That's not from the study, but I bet people who are brief use that one a lot.
Yeah.
I bet if you think about it, you use that one a lot. It's I have done the thing. The thing is done. Yeah. Good day.
It's so funny to me to think about it. Reminder, I've said a bunch of times, you know, obviously.
Reminder, when we got into this, I specifically said I was in it for this.
Yeah. You have to acknowledge that we have accomplished the goal of this conversation. So what are we still doing here?
Surely my honorable colleague would agree that I simply wanted to say happy birthday.
Which I accomplished within 15 seconds of us beginning this conversation. The gentleman from California would certainly acknowledge.
And yet, the gentleman from California also wants to tell me about modular synthesizers. I have no interest in this. I simply called to see how he was doing. We can agree on that.
This was not a modular synthesizer. This is not a modular synthesizer call.
I would argue that there never has been one.
All right. So the third closing ritual, is what they call a terminal exchange. These terminal exchange code words.
This is when one person chokes the other one out.
It's when you literally murder someone.
It's just done.
Out of a conversation. Why did you murder them? Well, because they kept talking about modular synths.
I just called to say happy birthday.
I had to order the hit in order to get out of the conversation. No, these terminal exchange code words are things like, okay, then.
Yeah. Well, all right.
Yeah, it's a code to let you know I'm done here.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. Okay.
I do sounds good a lot.
Yeah. It is just asking for acknowledgement that we're done here. You know, you're saying, okay, and the other person has to respond. Okay.
I wish,
and then you say
listen,
bye.
we need to get to a place where we are doing like military/truck driver on CB rules.
Yeah.
Where you can say over, but like once I say over and out, you know what I mean?
That's done. We're done.
That's it. I'm gone. Once I say over and out, I can literally hang up or walk away or do whatever. I could turn off the computer. Whatever terminates the thing immediately. Once I say over and out, I'm gone. There's no way to talk to me anymore. I've said over and out.
Yeah.
What if I started doing that in conversations?
Over and out. I think that's good.
Like at a bar.
I think it's really good. I like that.
I'm trapped in a corner at a bar with somebody, right? This person that my Terminator vision showed me them in the beginning. I said, I don't want to be trapped with this person. Then I get trapped with them. And they're telling me about whatever, something that probably is stupid, something that isn't about modular synths. And I'm like, okay, over and out. And then I just give them one of the shoulder pats and I just walk away.
Yeah.
Is that cool?
I like that.
Can I start doing that?
I think that's good. I think that's great because one of the things they talk about at the end of this article is that no one says, I want this conversation to end or I'm done with this conversation. That is considered rude, even though it is literally the truth of what you're trying to communicate with the terminal exchange phrase.
Well, it's funny. David Foster Wallace had this thing that he said. I forget in what story he said. He's like, you're not allowed to walk into a party and say, hello, my name is David, and I hope you all like me.
Right.
You're not allowed to say that. Like, you're not allowed to start a conversation with somebody and be like, I hope at the end of this conversation you like me.
Yeah.
You can't say that. And for this, and like, you can't say, I want this to be over. But like, I have had people say this to me. I have heard people say this. I have said this. But when you are like at something like a wedding or a bar or something, it's like, you can't say, all right, well, I'm just going to go around the room and say hey to people. Or like, I'm going to take a lap around and just say yo to everybody. I'll catch up with you later. And that's a totally fine way to do it, I think, at a party. I'm not bummed when somebody says it to me. I don't think people are bummed when I say it to them. It's just like, all right, man, good talking to you. I'm gonna check in with everybody because it's a whole party. You know?
Right.
It's a whole party, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think... The part of the study they don't mention in this article or in this study that I would be fascinated by is what percentage of people are both participants feel like the conversation went too long. Because I feel like that must happen a lot where we both want to get out of it and we both feel trapped.
But how does it come to that? If we both want out, do they have anything? Like, they have nothing in this study that explains how we get caught in those loops where we both are bored?
Well, what it comes down to is this sort of tacit social contract that we're in that says, I'm not able to communicate to you that I want to be out of this conversation.
It's just two people who feel stuck and don't know how to say that they feel stuck.
Yes. Haven't you felt that before?
Where yeah, I was in a marriage that like that.
Yeah. I think that might be the definition of marriage.
We're fine now, but for a while we were in a marriage like that.
Yeah, but that feeling when you, I mean, I've had that feeling where I'm like, I want to be done with this conversation. And I think the other person does too, but neither of us wants to offend the other person. Or you'll have that thing where you're like, you know, you're at the party and you go, oh, I guess I'll go freshen my drink. And they'll be like, oh yeah, I need to do that too. Like they were just as excited to be done with the conversation as you were, you know, but they didn't know how to do it.
Yeah. I mean, so here's the thing. And I hate to paint myself into this corner again. That shit does not happen to me.
Yeah.
If I'm not one of those, if I'm in a conversation that goes for too long and the other person is like, I'm going to go get a drink. Even if my drink is empty and it's visibly empty, I go, all right, good talking to you. And I will literally stagger it. So they go get their drink before I get mine. Cause they obviously want it out, or I want it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been in a thing where both parties are too polite to say they want out, because I'm not too polite to say I want out.
Right.
Maybe it happened to me when I was younger, but I don't have, man. I will find a way to extricate myself from that situation. And if you give me a signal, unless I'm talking about modular synths, which happens every once in a while, particularly on a day when I forgot to take my Adderall.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when it happens. If I haven't taken my Adderall, I may be talking to you for too long and I may not know it. But even then, yeah. I don't feel bored too. Do you know what I mean? I'm not, right. I'm never in the situation where it's a mutual boredom and wanting to get free.
Yeah, right.
And also because yeah. I'm just so fucking fascinating, Jeff.
Well, clearly. I
mean, no one's ever bored of me before that. I'm bored of them.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Part of the thrust of this article is how little actual research there's been done on this type of behavior, and how much there could be done on, because we really don't know much about the structure of how conversation works. They say how it starts, how it unfolds, or how it ends. There's been no real scientific research about it, and I think that's really interesting, because it's something that every single person experiences, but we haven't really broken it down with the scientific method. Instead, the authors conclude that people cannot coordinate what each participant wants from a conversation in terms of ending it at a mutually satisfactory time, according to their responses when asked later. So basically, we're just like, we're talking to each other and we have no idea what the other person even wants out of this.
Do you know what it sounds like? It sounds like maybe I'm thinking too much about it, but back in the day when fancy types would send their kids to like etiquette school, charm school, finishing school.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like there must have been at some point a series of manners and rules and regulations for and how long a conversation at a party can be. How long is polite? When do you leave that conversation? How do you let, if you reach the pre, like, let's say a polite conversation at a party is no more than 5 to 7 minutes. At the 5 to 7 minute mark, if it seems like you're both into the conversation, what is the proper way to signal that you'd like the conversation to continue while also letting the other person out of the conversation if they want? Like, I feel like these feel like Victorian era things that people would have focused on.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
This feels like some Bridgerton shit.
Yeah, created a whole structure and guidebook around it, you know?
We need that again. We need like a Miss Manners. We need an Emily Post.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it feels like it happens on its own with these, you know.
It only happens on its own 2% of the time.
No, but I mean these terminal response code words. Like we've all agreed upon them in some weird tacit way. You know?
Yeah.
We've all agreed that when you say okay then, I go, oh, they're trying to end.
But there needs to be reinforcement of those then. There needs to be some sort of like a finishing school, walking with a book on your head. And when somebody says, okay, I just called to say happy birthday, you let them go. No questions asked. No hard feelings.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think we reinforce these things enough.
No, I agree. And I've always been envious of my wife who can call her mom and have a conversation for like 14 seconds.
Love that
shit. If I call my parents, I'm on the phone for a half an hour minimum, you know, which makes me want to call them less frequently, which makes the conversations need to be longer. It's just this like self-fulfilling loop. I love talking to my parents. I'm not trying to avoid it, but it's like, oh, I got to carve out a whole hour of my life to have a conversation here. It's difficult. Where my wife can just like check in with her mom, pop in, go, oh, mom, hey, I had a question for you, blah, blah, blah. And then off the phone. And I don't have that skill. You know?
Love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish that was something. Yeah. I guess when my sister and I are definitely like that when we talk. We call, we check in, we do it real quick. There's usually business that we have to do over the phone because my sister and I will usually text. There's usually business that requires phone, a little bit of conversation, and then we're out. With my mother, it depends. It depends on some things. It depends on whether she's watching, like, once she turns on the TV, you can't get her to turn off the TV.
She's watching Jeopardy. And then she's gonna lock you in the freezer.
She's gonna lock me in the fucking freezer. But also, like, it depends on how stoned she is. That's a big one.
Yeah.
And you'd think, like, when she's stoned, she'd want to talk more, but she actually wants to talk way less. Because she wants to go, like, watch TV or, like...
Yeah, she wants to enjoy being stoned.
Yeah, put on an album or something. But yeah, probably about half an hour or two for me and my mom. Yeah, I'd say that. Yeah. Maybe 20. Yeah. If I can get it to weekly, sometimes I can get it down to 15 a week. But the difference between 15 a week or 30 twice a month is nothing, you know? That's the same amount of time. This is fascinating. I love that there are rules built in. We all know them. But we choose not to why do people choose? Do they talk about why people would choose not to recognize those signifiers?
No, it just talks about people wanting different things out of a conversation, and we have no structure in place to sort of agree on what we want out of the conversation. We start a conversation without having any mutual agreement on what is the ending condition, right?
You need to set an agenda. You need to set a meeting agenda for every conversation.
I have 2 minutes for this conversation. Mm-hmm. By the end of it, I'm hoping you feel like your birthday wishes have been received.
Yeah.
You know?
Send a calendar invite.
Exactly.
For the 15-minute happy birthday call.
Because that's another thing that I recognize in my own life is that I find there are some people that I'm always the one that has to wrap it up. And I feel bad because they are never the one who are like, okay, well, I got to go. I'm always that one in that exchange.
Do you think this is a mismatch of Dunbar categories?
Maybe.
Do you think, are you in their 15? Are you in their 15 and they're in your 150?
Dude, way to synergize the whole episode. But yeah, I think that
I'm like Z Mansfield over here.
Woo, look at you. That may be... that may be some of it, that the level of relationship is mismatched.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps. Perhaps.
Yeah. Think about that. Whoa. Whoa. Now we're on to something.
I love this stuff. I love parsing things that most people don't. I love looking at something scientifically that is just, you know, sort of accepted a priori. You know, we don't really question it because we do it every day. We do it so commonly. And then when somebody stops and goes, well, let's actually break that down and figure it out. And you go, yeah, it's kind of ridiculous.
Well, because this is the everyday stuff.
Yeah.
This is the everyday stuff that, like, if we looked more at it, could potentially make our lives a lot better in a social sense, in a relationship sense. These studies tend to become like real frivolous kind of BuzzFeedy articles and things like that, but there's something very interesting to this. Like, why don't we look more at how we structure conversation or how we talk to people? Why don't we think more about that?
Yeah, if only 2% of the people think that it worked out right, that's broken, dude. That's broken.
You know? My God. Millennials have ruined conversation.
That's the headline.
Do you, there is a, one of my favorite movies of all time is L.A. Story.
Oh, me too.
I watch L.A. Story. The number of times I rewatch L.A. Story in a year speaks to my mental health, I think. it goes higher and lower as my moods go higher. But there's this one thing that I've always loved since I was a kid, since I first saw it.
Where pointy birds, pointy, annoy my head.
Anointy. he's sitting at a restaurant with a group of people and they're all having lunch. And one of the characters goes, "Oh yeah, she's been taking a course on the art of conversation." And Steve Martin turns to her and goes, "Oh really? A course on the art? You've taken a course on the art of conversation?" And she goes, "Yes."
So good. It's so good.
And that's it.
So good. Such a beautiful Steve Martin joke, you know? So
but I
perfect.
Feel like this is it. That joke is what we're talking about right now. We don't think enough about this stuff. And this is the interaction stuff that is the fuel and the engine of our entire day.
Yes. Yes.
Our entire day.
We just accept it as being completely broken. And that's just cost of doing business. We just gotta go through life completely mystified by
there are so many articles on how to run an efficient meeting and how to you know, how to make sure that your meetings stick to 30 minutes and who are the right people to invite and what's an email versus a call versus in terms of business etiquette, we're overeducated.
Right.
For this, but for personal stuff, it's like, why don't we pay as much, like even 10% of the attention? This is just another, this is like the way I feel that Dunbar's numbers are organized based on sort of this sort of post-industrial corporate work culture life. I feel like this is emblematic of that too. If you know how to properly run a meeting without wasting people's time, how can you not have a conversation at a party?
Yeah. But I don't think anybody knows how. I mean, 2%. That's nobody knows what they're doing when it comes to conversations. It's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous. All right, well, I'm done with this podcast now. Over and out.
See? Efficient. That worked.
Efficient. It's done. It's over. Just like that. Yeah. Thank you to superstar Synergy Mansfield.
Synergy, well, way to go. Way to go. Thanks for always bringing the top tier submissions. If you want to get your own nickname, you know, you could submit stories for the show over on our Discord. That's found. You can find out how to become part of the Discord. It only takes $1 a month at patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. You could also email us at wehaveconcernsshow@gmail.com for free without supporting the show. That's no problem. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
Twitter is a terrible way.
No.
We haven't mentioned that in a while. I've gotten some stories on Twitter lately.
Not me.
Not a
people
not a good
better.
Way. Not a good
people
way.
Know better than to tweet at me. but yeah, you know, we flog the Patreon, we flog the Discord a lot. We do want to remind you the reason we make a show is just so people enjoy it and listen to the show. If you're listening to the show and enjoying it, you are doing everything we ever could have dreamed, and we are so happy to have you. Thank you for being a part of the community. If you do want to support the show a little bit, and you know, we know money is weird and hard and strange and abstract and not even real, like birds, you can, you know, tweet out a link to your favorite episode, tell a friend about the show. I've seen some people recommending the podcast on Twitter, and I do appreciate that. That's very kind of you.
Very, very much appreciated and very useful also. Yeah. Thank you.
If you do want to tweet, not story things at us, but you just want to follow us on Twitter, see what we're up to, I'm at @acarboni.
I'm at Jeff Cannata.
And over and out. For real.